Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
You know what I was thinking, just for shits and giggles, can we try to do the intro in sync simultaneously with one another? Just like do a countdown from 3 to 1 and then we both say it at the same time.
Say what at the same time?
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Okay, ready?
And my name is, and with me is, ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
You're welcome, listening to.
You're, that was welcome. When, okay. We've never once said you're listening to.
Okay.
Once.
Okay, ready? Year of
okay, ready? 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
My name is Jesse.
And I'm
Reese.
That didn't work.
No.
You get the gist.
Okay.
Anyway.
Can we try it? Like, you do it in a high-pitched, and I'll do it in a low-pitched.
Can I do the low-pitched one?
You do the low-pitched
one. I'm going to do the Satan voice again.
Okay, because I can do a really nice Batman voice.
I'll do Satan, you do Batman. They're just having a day out together.
Okay, ready?
Shopping.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
And my throat. I can't do the rest. Just need a drink. Satan. Satan ruined my throat.
I love that porn.
Just another t-shirt. Satan ruined my throat.
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring. I'm Jesse. This is Reese.
Hello.
Hello.
I am the Reese.
You're the Reese.
We got to get the
fuck out of the studio soon. So we're going to give me like 30 seconds of small talk. What you do? What's
stuff,
happening?
You do stuff. Cool. Yeah. Good. Anyway, do you like fighter jets?
They're cool. Yeah. Like the 7-year-old in me likes fighter jets. And I meant that literally. There's an actual 7-year-old inside of my stomach right now.
I was going to say, what was that bump on your shoulder?
Yeah.
Traps that keeps moving under your skin. the Avro Canada CF-105 Arrow is a legendary jet that was built and developed in Canada.
I only know as much as I was taught in 60 seconds from a Canadian Heritage Minute about the Avro Arrow, and that was about 15 years ago. So I don't really remember anything other than it was a jet.
It was a jet. Canada is known for many things, but making serious military hardware is not necessarily something that springs to mind.
No, but our military are known around the world for being exceptionally well trained
and very nice.
And very nice. It's true.
Exactly, yeah.
So maybe we're not known for building military equipment, but we are. Our military is known for
the personnel. The expertise of the personnel is respected globally. But obviously,
apparently, we constantly win war games, which is kind of fantastic.
That's great.
Hilarious.
Because do you know what though? I think it's because there's a sense of calm. And if you're in those situations, like you're doing war games, it's so easy to get emotionally high, like hyper and up there. But Canadians tend to be quite calm and chilled. So I think they just think clearly.
That's got to be it.
That's my guess. Or they're just good. They're just good.
No, I like the fact that they're chilled.
They're chilled and good.
Chilled military.
Chilled and good.
Yeah, chilled and good.
So Avro Canada was a Canadian aircraft manufacturing company that started in 1945. Basically, it was an aircraft plant that was just building and maintaining British designs and American designs during World War II, but became its own company. And within 13 years was the third largest company in Canada, one of the top 100 companies in the world.
Wow.
And employed over 50,000 people.
When was this?
Which was the 1950s and to 60s.
Wow. Is this Avro was the name of the company?
Avro, yes. Yeah, but like there's no...
So it was at the in the 50s, it was the third largest company in all of Canada. And today, no one's heard of it.
Well, I think some people have, just you haven't.
Well, is it... That doesn't surprise me.
You didn't know how the Senate worked, so I don't know. You know.
Who the fuck knows how the Senate works?
Well, I didn't until I researched
right,
the
episode. Exactly, yeah.
People who listen to this show do.
Right.
Well, they know how much they get paid and how many free MLs they get. So what happened was in the post-Second World War period, the Soviet Union
Can you say that a little sexier, a little more sultry?
In the post!
That's your sexy voice?
Yeah. Hey-o! The Soviet Union.
I just see you wearing knee high socks. While
it's very sensual, that voice.
Yes.
Anyway, the Soviet Union has developed a fleet capable of sending long range bombers with the ability to deliver nuclear weapons across North America and Europe. And the main threat was principally from high speed, high altitude bombing runs that would travel over the Arctic across. basically the north of Canada down over the industrial centers of Canada and the United States. And so the...
Who is shooting these missiles?
No, they weren't missiles. These were high-altitude, high-speed bombers that would drop nuclear bombs from...
Oh, from like bombing players.
Yeah, like from way up high. So that was
and they would sneak in over the Arctic and then through over Canada into
over Canada,
the States.
But drop the bomb from so high that they were very hard to detect and, you know, hard to attack. So
that's interesting. I was learning something about that just last night about how in World War II... They realized like, oh, if we want to win this, then strategic bombing would be like an incredibly powerful tool in our arsenal. If we like to know exactly like with math and science, like, oh, we just go incredibly high up, but we figured out like precisely where to drop the bomb so that it doesn't just blanket cover an area. It's like, no, we want to get that warehouse. We want to get this district, et cetera. And like the math was kind of there, but they didn't account for the chaotic winds at that level of the atmosphere, and so it just did completely failed.
That's just a little great tidbit
of information that
we forgot about wind.
We forgot about wind.
It's like a giant room full of like mathematical geniuses, and they do all the equations. They go, "This will work," and then somebody goes, "Does anyone think about wind?" They're like, "Fuck, let's just try it anyway."
Did anyone forget about wind? Yeah. Shut your face, Steve. No one asked you.
Making this look bad, Steve, you dick. So Western countries began to build interceptors, which were basically high-speed, high-altitude jets that could intercept, as the name would suggest.
But what would they, how would they intercept? What would they do?
As in they would fly up there and shoot the shit out of them.
Okay.
That's how I would define intercept in that context. Canada had been building and maintaining generally allied designs, but they decided to build their own interceptor. So the Royal Canadian Air Force, the first jet they built was the Avro CF-100 Canuck all-weather interceptor.
The Canuck?
The all-weather interceptor, which is like, it's waterproof and windproof.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of Canadians' jets is they leak a lot. Yeah. Whenever it rains, oh God!
So the thing about this jet was that they created their own jet engine from scratch that was different from a lot of the jet engines that anybody else was using. So kind of just
why?
Like they just like, oh,
I mean, cool, but why?
I got to build a jet engine my way because and so Rolls Royce and General Electric were the people making jet engines, but Avro they had this gas turbine division, and they. But I don't understand the science of it, but essentially what they built was...
You're telling me that you're not a rocket scientist?
I'm not. I'm literally not a rocket scientist. But the science says it was good. just to summarize, I don't want to go into too high level for people.
Did they remember about wind?
They remembered about wind.
Oh, good. Okay.
And it was among the fastest of all the first generation fighters built at that time.
Oh, wow. Really?
So Canada's way of doing the engine... the engine was one of the greatest success of it was the fact that they just built a really bloody good engine.
But not like, what about the structure of the airplane itself? I thought like how the wings were shaped.
So I'll show you a picture.
And,
it looks pretty cool.
I remember it. Yeah.
There you go.
No, I don't remember that.
So
it looks different than this isn't the Avro airplane we're talking about.
No, the Avro. No, yeah. This was the predecessor to the Avro.
Okay. All right.
And it was, it would take off at a very short takeoff run. Which was good because it didn't need a very, you know, we could take off in more diverse places and a high climb rate. So as an interceptor, it could take off and then go up to the upper atmosphere very directly.
Oh, cool.
So it was very fast.
That's pretty neat.
And in on the 18th of December, 1952, squadron leader Janusz Zarowski, the Avro Company chief development test pilot, took it up to Mach 1.10 at a dive.
Mach?
Mach.
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 Pronounce it or spell it?
M-A-C-H.
Yeah, Mach.
Mach. Mach.
Oh, I think it's
Mach. I see. Okay. Anyway, it went fast. And in a dive, he did a dive from 45,000 foot, making it the first straight wing jet aircraft to achieve controlled supersonic flight.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty neat.
And it was really good. They sold, Belgium bought some. Oh, that's all you need to know.
That's okay. End of episode.
The end.
Belgian bought some.
So that was the CF-100, but then they basically recognizing that, so there were a lot of delays building it. It was really good, but all the other stuff came into it. Like they were, there was a lot of. It's a complicated thing to build. So they were, the technology basically started to change, and the Soviets were advancing their technology at such a fast rate that some newer jet-powered bombers were built that made the CF-100 arguably ineffective against the supersonic bombers or the high-speed bombers that were being built. So by the time the Canuck was finished, it was kind of almost not going to be able to keep up with the German, the Russian bombers. So wrong war. So they came up with the CF-105, the famous one, and
the arrow,
yeah. And the arrow was a delta wing aircraft, which is basically like a triangle shape.
Oh right, okay.
So you can see now there's a picture of one.
Yeah, that's right.
It
looks like a paper airplane.
Did you have Thunderbirds? It does look like. Do you have Thunderbirds in Canada?
Thunderbirds.
It looks like something from Thunderbirds, but it does really also look like an airplane.
Like a giant paper airplane. It really does.
But the delta wing is like the delta wing essentially is it's like benefits to it being high speed, and it's built like that shape for a reason.
So does it have two names, the arrow and the delta wing, or
no? The delta wing is the name of the design of aircraft that are triangle shaped.
So, oh, I see. Okay.
So like it's the same. I think the British had a Vulcan bomber that would be a delta wing.
Okay,
which is huge. So the go-ahead on production was given in 1955 for the new improved version, and the company planned to capitalize on the event of the launch of the Arrow. They had 13,000 guests there to launch it. But
wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, the same day, Sputnik was announced.
Oh, of course. So there we go. Yeah, there it is. So
completely stole the thunder of this amazing jet. Which has got to be frustrating when you spent all that time. You're going, we've built one of the most advanced fighter jets in the world with a very small team in Canada, and then this thing that no one could have comprehended or thought of suddenly appears in space.
Right.
Yay.
That's just shitty timing, man. Yeah. Like, really shitty timing.
So the Zarowski, the test pilot, flew the new one in 1958. And the test flights of the prototype were kind of assessing flight characteristics and looking for serious design faults. The aircraft went supersonic on its third flight. On the seventh flight, it broke 1,000 miles per hour or 1,600 kilometers an hour at 50,000 feet while climbing, and a top speed of Mach, as you would say, or Mach, as everybody else says.
No.
1.98 was achieved. And apparently that wasn't even the limits of his performance. They weren't pushing it to his maximum capacity because they were just testing the prototype, looking for faults.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Hold on. What? You go up there until that thing fails.
Exactly. Which I find is amazing. So apparently the comments about it was, it was improved. It was effective at rolling. There was excellent progress was being made, and it was performing and meeting all guarantees. So basically, the report was that it was awesome, and it did everything they needed to, and it would be able to keep up with those new jet fighters, jet bombers. And
so, what happened? It's not around anymore.
This is where the politics comes in.
Yay! Yeah, I was wondering. You're literally just wondering. But our show deviates so much; it wasn't really a surprise.
I know. It was argued as it was definitely one of the most advanced fighters of the 1950s.
Yeah.
And one of the most successful kind of like development programs in terms of building it. But in 1953, senior Canadian military officials began to question the program because they were strongly opposed because substantial funds were being diverted to the Air Force to develop this one fighter jet. So a lot of the military budget was going into making this thing. It was great. But
right.
It wasn't necessarily sustainable given the overall budget across the rest of the military.
It was one of the world's most efficient and effective jets the world has ever seen, and Canada not really being a huge military stronghold, or not stronghold, military presence in the world. Fuck that, scrap it.
Well, and it's like me signing a lease on a five-year lease on a Rolls Royce, you know. It'll look good. It'd be fun to drive. It'd be comfortable, but I can't afford it. You know, it's just reality, I guess. I mean, but So Diefenbaker became prime minister, and
or just sell them to the states.
Well, they were building their own, and it's political.
Yeah, but ours was better.
But they needed to employ their own teams to build their own. You know, this is the industrial military complex of the United States that is big business. They weren't going to.
Right.
They were going to build their own American planes. They weren't going to import Canadian planes. They're not like Belgium, you know.
Thank you, Belgium.
Yeah, yeah. So Diefenbaker, who was a progressive conservative, basically came in complaining about rampant liberal spending on fighter jets.
rampant liberal spending. Exactly. Oh, those wacky liberals.
But by 1958, Avro had interests in rolling stock, steel, coal, electronics, and actually was a parent company of 39 different companies. So they grew massively. But again, though, the technology moved on again really fast in the Cold War. And these new things called intercontinental ballistic missiles or ICBMs became fashionable. They were all the rage.
Fashionable. Yep.
Yeah, people were wearing them down Carnaby Street in London. And obviously, not even the Arrow could do anything against those missiles.
Right.
So there was a new NORAD was set up. And Diefenbaker was invited by the Americans to be part of NORAD.
What is NORAD again?
The North American Air Defense. So it was like a defense shield against ballistic missiles that would basically monitor the skies for incoming missiles. If the Canadian...
Hold on, North American
Air Defense.
Air Defense. So just NAD?
It should be NAD, but it's called NORAD. I don't know what that means. North.
So N-O.
Air Defense. NOR.
R.
Air Defense.
R NORAD. The air?
It should be NAD. NAD means NAD. Testicle in the UK. Oh, my NADs.
Yeah, it means it here too.
Does it?
Yep. Yeah. Should be. That's probably why they try
Transatlantic
to...
NAD.
Yeah.
So essentially...
That's a well-traveled NAD. Yeah.
But by signing to be part of NORAD, that was going to take up...
Call them what they are. Reason.
To become part of NADs, space NADs, was going to be... So basically, to be part of a giant missile defense system costs a lot of money. And if you want to buy in and play with the Americans, you got to put your hand in your pocket. And that was going to
play with your NADs.
Play with your NADs. Yeah. Put your hand in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Grab your NADs and hope for the best. So 25 to 30% of the budget was going to be spent on NADs, which meant on the 20th of February, 1959, a day became known as Black Friday in the Canadian aviation industry.
It's where everything went on sale. You can buy jets for super cheap.
And Diefenbaker claimed the decision was based on a thorough examination of threats and defense measures and the cost of defensive systems. And instantly, 14,528 Avro employees, as well as 15,000 other employees in the supply chain, were basically out of work instantly.
Fun.
And 2 months after the project cancellation, all aircraft, engines, production tooling, and technical data were scrapped and destroyed.
Oh, wow.
Officially, the reason given the destruction order was to destroy classified and secret materials in the Arrow program. They were worried that that spies were stealing, were going to get hold of that information if it was scrapped. So they destroyed.
If it wasn't scrapped, you mean? Yeah.
If it wasn't scrapped. So they destroyed everything.
Wow.
All this amazing technology, they just, rather than sell it to Belgium.
And you know Belgium will buy it.
They love it. They love it.
That's amazing. Oh my God.
But also, apparently...
War is weird.
Only certain parts remain. So there's a bit of nose gear. There's two outer panels. There's some wings that are on display in the Canada Aviation and Space Museum in Ottawa, where I want to go. One of the engines as well, apparently, or part of the engine. And rumors circling.
We should have a road trip.
Rumors circling that the Air Marshal W.A. Curtis, who was a World War One ace, so he was like flying the original ones, had ignored Diefenbaker and stolen one of the Arrows and preserved it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was.
He still has one.
This is the rumor. And they asked him in an interview in 1968 if the rumor was true, and he said, "I don't want to answer that." If it is in existence, we may have to wait another 10 years. Politically, it causes a lot of trouble. So the legend endures about whether this Arrow still exists or not.
Oh, we should.
Which I love.
That's
like a mystery. Like, help us solve the Arrow.
Let's go on a road trip, and that'll be like our goal is to find the Arrow.
Exactly.
Oh my God, that's a great idea for an episode.
Also, January the 6th, 2020, which is roughly less than a year ago, The CBC News announced that the Arrow's plans, which were thought to have been destroyed, were actually kept by one of the senior draftsmen, a guy called Ken Barnes, in 1959.
Yeah, I would do the same fucking thing. If I built the Arrow, exactly. And someone's like, you spies might get that. You better burn that. Oh, yes, sir. Right away.
He took the blueprints home where they remained stored. Do you know what I would have done? I would have loudly took them.
I'm not taking
it. And they're now on display.
Oh, really?
I think in the Diefenbaker Canada Center.
So we can recreate the Arrow, which I'm assuming would not be...
Let's do it, but let's do it like paper craft. Let's make it, like you said, it looked like a paper airplane. Yeah. Let's make the, follow his plans and build the Arrow out of paper. Out of paper.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't sound hard at all.
It won't be all weather like the other one was. If it rains, we'll be dead. So I once did a documentary show at a military airbase in the UK, and it was a fighter jet school. I didn't get to go up in a fighter jet, but I did get to sit in a real fighter jet and go, I'm sat in a fighter jet, and then get out again like a 5-year-old.
Did you enjoy it? Did you have fun?
I did get to go into this.
Did you get your photo taken?
I got several photos taken. I did think, I went, if I pulled the ejector seat, I would get smushed against that ceiling because we were in a hangar.
Right. but you thought about it, didn't you?
I think everybody does. Yeah, right. If you're in a fighter jet, you always go, I wonder if I could pull the ejector.
Probably disconnected that. Just exactly. A little, yeah, because some schmuck is at some point like, check
the remember me. But one thing I did get to do was fly a probably would have been the value, I'm trying to do the rough currency exchange, a $20 million flight simulator with a real cockpit with like a 360 dome we were in. And you had to wear the helmet and you were sat in there and all the console was laid out. And essentially I then got to play in that for an hour and fly the equivalent in a virtual thing, which is like, you know, when people have race car games on their video game systems and they buy pedals and steering wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that, but on steroids.
Oh, that's cool. I would like to do that. That sounds
good.
That sounds neat.
And because it wasn't real, you could do really irresponsible things like crash, or I flew under a bridge. Zero consequences.
It's a slogan for our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of the fun experiences. And the really funny thing was they have cameras in there, because if pilots are training, their superiors will come in and there's like a control room where you can watch them, and they play the videos back, and I have never seen a bigger grin on my face. like a 5-year-old. just sat there smiling like an idiot in the simulator.
I want to see these. Do you have a video of this?
I'll dig it out. I'll see if I can find some of them. Yeah,
please.
Yeah. There's tons of pictures of me like with a thumbs up.
I want to put it on our website if you do find it.
Exactly. That was a crazy week at the airbase. Reese's crazy week at the airbase. Chapter one. And weirdly, I got to make films with all training situations, not real things. I filmed with the Navy on a warship, and also with the Army in the training area where they train the infantry, and that was cold and delirious by the end of the. But it was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Why were you borderline delirious?
Because we were out living in the forest for 3 days.
Hold on, what? Let's just back this train up a little bit. Okay, tell me this story.
So it was simulated war games with the infantry.
Okay, hold on. You were doing a documentary?
Yeah, TV show.
Okay, and it was about?
I was the producer and sound man because we were a small crew. And we had to keep up with people training, and the presenter was training to be in the military. And they would like hike miles and miles and then sleep an hour. And what they were doing was putting a lot of pressure on the infantrymen to make them feel tired and stressed, and then testing them.
Oh, that's just super fun.
But we had to film them be tested. So we had to follow them the whole time. So while they were going to sleep and waking up.
So you were experiencing the same amount of exhaustion then.
Yeah. Jesus. But we had to film them experience it.
So you weren't even sleeping while they were sleeping. Because you were filming them sleeping.
I remember Nathan, who was the co-director and cameraman, he fell asleep. We had sleeping bags, and I woke up. And there was snow on my face, and he fell asleep with his hand outside the sleeping bag, and it took him 3 days to get his hand to warm.
Oh my God, what?
It was so much fun. And the best part was they gave us boxes of I love army rations. They gave us army rations, like British army rations. And it was in every box had enough.
They're pretty tasty, aren't they?
Yeah, they had enough food for 24 hours. And it was great. I loved them. And we took a few boxes back with them. And I used to eat them for lunch. Enough about my experience hanging out with people who are way better trained than me and more impressive while I run around with a boom pole. But so.
That was pretty fascinating, honestly. I didn't. I learned quite a bit, honestly. And I never come into these episodes expecting to learn a thing. Let's face it.
Great. Honestly, yeah. So if you want to help us build the world's most dangerous paper airplane, send us an email.
So do you have anything else to teach me on this?
No, that's it. We're done.
We're done?
So I hope we find the missing plane. And if we don't, we should build another one.
I want to do a road trip where we try to find the missing plane. I think it'd be a great, great episode.
Indiana Jones and the quest for the missing plane.
Yeah.
That's taken.
So our takeaway, our call to action today, we've done Instagram a lot. I think we should take a break from telling people to go to Instagram or our website or t-shirts. So tonight, my suggestion is for as soon as this podcast is over, it's a long winter, it's dark, it's cold, everyone, there are wolves after you. You should do 15 jumping jacks.
Or do something for you. Light some candles. Have a bath.
Light some candles. Do some jumping jacks, have a bath.
Watch a zombie film.
There you go.
Whatever you do to relax.
Yeah. What's up? Zombie films are very relaxing.
They're good.
Yeah. Candles, some incense.
I like those.
Have some cookies.
I like those ones.
Yeah.
I've never seen people who, they love a film, I love that genre. Even if the films are terrible, they just love the genre so much. They'll literally watch anything.
I like zombie films a lot, actually.
Yeah, even if they're bad, just watch them. It's fine. It's better than the real world.
So tonight is about you, listener. It's all about you.
Call to action is you.
Yeah. Let us know what you did for your you day.
Yeah. But if you did put a rink in your backyard, keep it to yourself. We'll see you next week.
Had to bring that back, didn't you? Bye.